Metcast, Saturday, November 2nd, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your Metcast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the Maccast. Well, what do you like to do on a Saturday night? Yep, me. I like to get in front of a mic and talk about Apple and Mac news. Yeah, I know I'm crazy, right? It's just the thing we do. Actually, it's just how the schedule works out, but I'm happy to be here with you discussing all things Apple and Macintosh. Hopefully, this is not your Saturday night listening to this podcast, or maybe it is. That'd be okay too, I guess. But hey, hopefully you're out having a good time and you're picking this up maybe later in the week, Sunday morning, out running errands, whatever you might be doing. But however you're getting it, whenever you're getting it, I'm glad to have you here with me as always. And as always, we've got some really good stuff to get into, including a new earnings report from Apple. We'll take a look at how they did this past quarter. Also talk about, as we often do, what's coming up next for iPhone. There were a couple of OS releases to get into. iOS release that brings some new features for iPhone 11. We'll talk about HomePod and a little snafu there and some other things related to iOS, and then we're still waiting on a couple products from Apple. We're going to get into one of those that we expected to see and talk a little bit about another future Mac product that should be coming soon. And that will round out the news for this week. Then we're going to jump into a little bit of feedback. Like I said, some new stuff came out. We have a new product out that I got my hands on, so we'll talk about some of my first impressions on Apple's new AirPods Pro, and also some first impressions on Apple's new TV Plus service, which just came out on November 1st. I got a chance to watch one of the shows. I haven't dove into too many yet, but I'll give you my first impressions there. Then we have a question about installing macOS Catalina on some older Macs. We'll try to help a listener out there, and then talk about one of the new features that is in the HomePod and how you can access that and enjoy that new content. And that will round out this episode of the Maccast. So it should be a good one. But before we dive into it, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Linode. Hey, if you need to do web hosting, and a lot of us do, I think you really should take a moment and check out Linode, because they make it super easy to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in their Linode cloud. You can get a server up and running literally in minutes with your choice of Linux distribution, resources, and you can even pick the location where you want that server. One of the things I love about Linode is all the choices that they give you. Another thing I love about Linode is that they're giving Maccast customers, new Maccast customers, a $20 credit. So you can try it out and use that credit to set up your new server. So if you've been wanting to set up a gaming server, they have one-click installs for that, something like Minecraft, which is what I did, Ark, Terraria. Maybe you want to set up a WordPress server, Drupal, GitLab, OpenVPN. They have that and a whole bunch more. Makes it really easy to get up and running. And like I said, a bunch of different distributions of Linux. So if you have your favorite Linux, it will run on Linode. They have most distributions right out of the box, but you can even upload your own custom image if you want to create your own. Basically, they make it very easy to set up and build whatever server you want. And it has great features like native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and industry-leading processors. And like I said, you can pick from any of their 10 worldwide data centers, including their newest one, which they just opened up in Toronto, Canada. They make pricing simple as well, no surprise fees, and you pay for what you want using hourly billing across all of their plans and add-on services. You can get up and running with a $5 a month Nanode plan, and you have the option to crank that all the way up to a high-powered dedicated CPU plan if you want. And that's super easy to do because they have a dashboard that lets you manage everything and makes upgrading your plan super easy. Also, while you're in there, you can add on cool things like backups, large storage volumes, and load balancing. And all of that is covered by their 24/7 live customer support and a huge documentation library that provides a great resource for when you get stuck. Visit Linode.com/Maccast to set up your first Linode and get a $20 credit when you use the promo code MACCAST2019. That's Linode.com/Maccast. Use the code 2019 to get a $20 credit. And a big thank you to Linode for their support of the MACCAST. Apple held their fourth quarter 2019 earnings call this week, and as you might imagine, it was not too shabby. They did pretty well. As a matter of fact, Apple's revenue grew nearly 2% year over year to $64 billion, with a profit of $13.69 billion, beating analysts' expectations. How that broke down, they don't break it down by individual models anymore. They used to tell us how many Macs and iPhones and those sorts of things they sold, but they do break it down by revenue category. So we do know that they sold $33.36 billion worth of iPhones, did $12.5 billion in services, almost $7 billion in Macs, another $6.52 billion in wearables, home, and accessories, and $4.66 billion in iPad. That's a lot of billions, folks. Yep, Apple doing quite well. The iPhone numbers actually only cover a week of iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro sales, so the full impact of those updates really won't be known until the first quarter of 2020. But Tim Cook did say on the earnings call that iPhone 11, not the Pro models, but the iPhone 11, is now Apple's best-selling phone. iPhone revenue did drop, though, by about 9% year over year. That decline's been happening for a while, but the good news here is that that rate is in the single digits for the first time since the end of 2018, when we started seeing iPhone decline. So it's slowed down a little bit, which is ultimately good for Apple. iPad revenue also grew 17%, helped by the popularity of the iPad Pro. And as it has been in the past, services revenue continues to grow, up 18% this time around. And that is being helped, of course, by the launch of new services like Apple Arcade. And we expect to see even more growth with the now launch of Apple TV Plus. As far as which part of the business is doing the best, that's actually the wearables, home, and accessories business. That grew by more than 50% year over year, likely bolstered by the popularity of Apple Watch and Apple Watch Series 5. So overall, Apple did very, very well in the quarter. It was exciting to see these numbers. The stock price reflected that that success. And as far as the holiday quarter for this year, Apple is pretty bullish on it. They're expecting pretty strong holiday sales with guidance above the $84.3 billion that they generated last year in the holiday quarter. They think they're going to make between $85.5 and $89.5 billion this year. So Apple pretty positive on the holiday quarter, probably due to the fact that iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro sales are going quite well. Again, plus also launching all of these new services, new AirPods Pro, a lot of things in the pipeline for the holiday quarter. And I guess we're still kind of expecting a couple more items, maybe. Please, Tim Cook, can I have a new 16-inch MacBook Pro? That's the one that I want to see. I don't know. I'm tentative now since we didn't get some announcements in October. We're still hearing a little bit about these products, but I'm getting more and more hesitant or more and more convinced that those things might not show up till after the holiday quarter. If they can get there in the holiday quarter, though, that might explain some of this bullish, these bullish figures on the revenue predictions for this year. We'll just have to wait and see. But there certainly are plenty of things for Apple fans and folks to buy over the holiday quarter. Many are expecting that there may be some changes for iPhone in 2020, something we've talked about a little bit, is a potential redesign. We've kind of had 3 years of the same design that we have with the iPhone 11 Pros, and many are expecting Apple to maybe go a little bit retro. Rumors of the 2020 iPhone returning to a more squared-off design reminiscent of the iPhone 4 have been floating around for a while. I think it'd be nice to go back to that square style with the metal band and maybe more of a matte finish than the glossy finish we've been having. We also talked, I think, last time about the antenna lines maybe getting a little bit of a redesign, might even be getting a little bit wider, and I think that phone design might lend itself a little bit better to that sort of change. But the other big thing we're hearing about this week is that we might be finally getting a 120 hertz ProMotion display on the iPhone, just like we have on the iPad Pro. This is according to DigiTimes. They tend to have mixed results on rumors, but this seems like a natural next step for Apple. You know, iPads currently use LCD panels and the iPhones are OLED, and the OLED panels that on the iPhones have been limited so far to 60 hertz. We have seen other OLED screens in the market that are about 90 hertz, but anything over that is pretty rare. I think there's one device currently on the market that does 120 hertz. It does feel like that would be the next step for Apple, though, because a 120 hertz display would improve responsiveness and offer better video playback quality. Also, if Apple is really planning some sort of headset, especially if that's going to do any kind of VR, it would be much better to have a faster refresh rate on the display. So, will it happen? Possibly. I think at the very least we get above 60 hertz, maybe with a 90 hertz display, but Apple could crank it all the way up to 120, assuming it all works out. 2020 iPhones are also expected to adopt 5G technology from Qualcomm and may have a smaller or no notch at all. We've been hearing that they might figure out a way to make the sensors a little bit smaller and kind of cram them up into the actual bezel on the iPhone. So fans of fans who don't like the notch, yep, you might get your wish. So there's that. And one other thing related to what's next for iPhone, Ming-Chi Kuo believes that Apple will begin production on the iPhone 8 SE2. Yeah, that's my name for the updated low-cost entry-level iPhone. Many people are just calling it the iPhone SE2. But he is expecting that Apple will start production in January with a possible release sometime in March. He thinks that Apple could sell between 2 to 4 million iPhone 8 SE2s per month, which would be a similar sell-through rate as the iPhone SE. Just a quick reminder, though, it is believed that it will be a device with the same design as an iPhone 8, thus my funny naming convention for it, but that it would come with an updated A13 processor, 3 gigabytes of RAM, and a possible updated antenna design. It will start at the same entry-level price point as the current iPhone SE, or is believed it will, at $399 US, and come in configurations of 64 gigabyte and 128 gigabytes. So this would be a great device. I guess the downside is, as we've discussed, that if you are a fan of the iPhone SE's 4-inch size, it's not going to be that. It's going to be the 4.7 of the iPhone 8. So a little bit of a compromise there. You're getting a really nice entry-level phone, but you're going to have a slightly larger display. So I don't know what you fans out there of the 4-inch devices are going to do. I would imagine a lot of you will still stick with the iPhone SE if you have one, and then eventually probably upgrade to something like the updated iPhone SE 2. But we'll have to wait and see what Apple does. Sounds like it's not going to show up, though, until the first quarter of next year. Apple released iOS 12.4.3 this week, and the big news there is for iPhone 11 owners, Apple added in the Deep Fusion computational photography feature. It was It is available and is enabled automatically when you're using the wide-angle lens, and it detects that it can add improvements to your image quality. It sounds like it's mostly going to happen in low and mid-level light situations. Apple says it uses the A13 Bionic Neural Engine to capture multiple images at various exposures, run a pixel-by-pixel analysis, and fuses the highest quality parts of the images together, resulting in photos with dramatically better texture, details, and reduced noise, especially for mid-to-low-light scenes. Basically, it works like an enhanced version of their smart HDR technology, capturing and blending multiple exposures and images together in real time using that A13 Bionic Neural Engine. So pretty cool stuff for you and me. Just means our pictures are going to look better on our iPhone 11 models. Some other new features added in iOS 12.4.3, the Announce Messages with Siri feature. This will read back messages to you when you have headsets connected that have Apple's H1 chip, like the AirPod 2s and the AirPods Pro. You can enable this feature in Settings under Siri and Search under Announce Messages. And what will happen is when you get an incoming message, Siri will read that message to you, and then you can immediately reply without having to say the "Hey, lady" option. So you can just say, "Reply, I'm on my way," or "Tell her I'll meet you there," and the message will get sent right out. Now, by default, she will read back the message and confirm your message before sending it, but there also is a setting for that. You can enable reply without confirmation, and then the message will just automatically get sent. So with Announce Messages with Siri, it makes it much easier to use your voice to handle and respond to your incoming messages. And I tried this out and it works pretty darn good. I often send messages using my voice when I'm in the car and things like that. And this is going to make the experience even better with my new AirPods Pro. The iOS update also, of course, has security updates and other bug features. It adds 60 new emoji, also adds the option to opt out of sharing your Siri recordings with Apple. Those are the ones that they would typically use to improve Siri. That was the thing that they got in a little bit of hot water over, and we talked about here on the MacCast, where they were, you know, analyzing these recordings anonymously to help improve Siri, but they didn't really disclose it. So now it's right there up front. As a matter of fact, when you update to iOS 12.4.3, it will throw up a message asking you if you do want to opt in to those, to sharing those recordings. And of course, you can opt out and not share them. Also, if you do have new AirPod Pros, you are going to need this update because that brings support for those. And along with this, they also released iOS 13.2 update for HomePod, but that one didn't go too smoothly, and hopefully none of you got caught by this, because quickly there were reports of the update bricking HomePods, actually to the point where Apple was having to send out replacements or give replacement HomePods to people. Apple quickly pulled the update and then re-released it later in the week as iOS 13.2.1 for HomePod. It does add support for handoff and ambient sounds, and also brings multi-user support with voice recognition to the HomePod. Now, I will tell you, I installed the update and I had a bear of a time, as did a few others that I read about online, getting the voice recognition feature to be set up. As a matter of fact, one MacCast listener wrote into me and said he had a pretty angry wife who suddenly couldn't use the HomePod because it kept saying, "I don't recognize who you are." So what I had to do ultimately was actually reset my HomePod. I had to reset the Home application, which was a big pain in the rear because I had to re-add all of my smart home devices and reset up my scenes and stuff like that. It was kind of a pain, but once I did all of that, it did start working as expected. So I will say it's a little bit buggy, but you can get it up and running. And some of the other new features, like the ambient sounds, are really nice, and we'll talk about those a little bit later in the podcast. There are also reports that iOS 13.2 may be a little bit too aggressive at killing off your background apps and processes. This is coming from multiple users online and sources that are developers like Marco Armont. The allegations are that iOS 13 is doing a pretty poor job of memory management, and that is causing apps to reload more frequently, meaning that they have to launch back up, effectively making multitasking useless in many cases. Armont also claims via Twitter that background downloads often hang forever and never run. Certainly something he would notice because he makes the very popular podcast app Overcast. And I know many of you use that app. So if you've been struggling or having issues with your podcast downloads in the background, that might explain a number of things. So I personally have not noticed this on my version of iOS running on my iPhone, but I don't think I do a lot of multitasking. I also don't do a lot of multitasking on my iPad, although I am doing more. It hasn't affected me day to day, but it does sound like this is a problem. So I'm curious to hear, have any of you noticed these things? And if you have, let us know what you're seeing out there. Shoot us an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. But a little bit of a rough go for iOS this time around. Also, macOS has had its fair share of issues. Once again, community kind of calling into question Apple's priorities and what Apple is doing. I, for my part, I think they could probably move to start to look at a slower roll on new features and rollouts for their operating system. I also think that they could get away, especially with macOS, to not sticking to a yearly schedule and just moving to the point where they release the OS and the features when they're ready to go. Does anybody feel differently about that? I kind of feel like we'd all accept fewer features that work really, really well without bugs versus these big kind of massive updates, or even just Apple moving to sort of a TikTok cycle like they have in the past, where you have a big year with a lot of new features, and then the next year is all about streamlining, improving, just making those experiences better. You would hope the experiences would be great up front, but however they need to get there, I think we as a community would be more than accepting and willing to allow them to do that. I don't know why there's this relentless pressure to release all these big new features, unless it's to kind of prop up or support iPhone sales. But I think the numbers aren't really showing that that is necessarily working. I think people are generally happier when their stuff works without issues and when their software updates go more smoothly. So I don't know. If you want to share your opinions on that, shoot me an email, audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. And then finally, in the news for this week, there are those few products that we heard rumored that we're kind of still waiting on to see if they launch this year. And one of those is looking more and more likely like it might come out in the next week or so. And that is Apple's tile-like tracking product for personal items. These are supposed to be little trackers that you could put on everyday objects like bags, keys, water bottles, and they were expected to be announced along with the iPhone 11s, but as you know, that did not happen. Well, in iOS 13.2, there are some references, including a folder, to something with the name AirTag, and it is believed that these might be called AirTags. They are placeholder assets with images of AirPods, HomePod, and other devices. There's also a video file in there titled Battery Swap, which may show you how to change out the battery in your AirTags. And basically, you would be able to track your AirTagged devices with Apple's Find My app, and it would likely leverage the new ultra-wideband technology in the iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pros to help you track down and locate your items with more accuracy at short ranges. So the fact that those references are in iOS 13.2 kind of makes us feel like this must be something that Apple is getting set to release fairly soon. And it would be another great item for the holidays, especially make a great stocking stuffer, say, for your favorite Mac Apple tech fan in your life. So we could see these come. Who knows? If we do, I would imagine, again, it would happen in the next few days or weeks. If we don't see them by then chances are it's going to be put off until sometime next year. Some other things that were noticed in the assets that could mean a new product for the holidays. iOS 13.2 also seems to have assets that show Apple could have a smart battery case for iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pros. That seems very likely. Despite those having that weird bump, they tend to be very popular with a lot of folks. And that would be another great item to have Apple to have out for the holidays. So I could see that hitting stores, just a quiet rollout of that product, which is usually what happens. A few other items that we're sort of waiting on have been rumored. One of the big ones is the 16-inch MacBook Pro. I'm feeling like that's probably not going to show up this year, and there seems to be more indication in the rumor mill that that might not happen. There is debate about an image that was discovered in macOS 10.15.1 Catalina Beta 2. Some claimed it was the alleged 16-inch MacBook Pro with the narrower bezels. That image was removed from the latest beta, which actually adds kind of some credence to the rumor. And what was also discovered was an image that showed a Touch ID power key separated from the touch bar, which could mean a couple things. One, it kind of supports the theory that Apple could be doing a redesigned keyboard with scissor switches. It also seems to indicate, although there's not a picture of it, that if the Touch ID sensor is separate from the touch bar, maybe Apple will put back the physical escape key on the other side to sort of balance out the design. A lot of folks have not been happy about the virtualized escape key, so that would be another great design that would meet some of the demands from the community. So that would be very exciting. The question is, will we see a 16-inch MacBook Pro in 2019? Because there is a new note this week from Ming-Chi Kuo, and while he doesn't talk specifically about the 16-inch MacBook Pro, he does talk about the redesigned scissor switch keyboard coming to MacBooks that may launch sometime in mid-2020. Even goes so far as to mention in that note that Taiwanese manufacturer Wistron would reportedly be supplying those new scissor switch keyboard mechanisms. So some credence to that, you know, we would expect a mid-launch of a MacBook Pro lineup, maybe sometime around Worldwide Developer Conference. The question then comes into play, will that be a full lineup of MacBook Pros, including the updated 16-inch model, or are we going to get that this year? And then the question would be, if we do get that this year, is it going to have the updated keyboard? Because now we're hearing about updated keyboards in 2020. So a lot of things in flux surrounding the potential for a new MacBook Pro this year. I'm still holding out hope, although, like I said, that hope is dwindling. And finally, one product, though, we do know that Apple will put out this year, or they better put out this year because they've said it so many times and we've been waiting so long, is that Mac Pro, the updated modular Mac Pro, the new cheese grater Mac Pro, whatever you want to call it. It did get FCC approval this week, and that feels like one of the last steps to happen before Apple actually launches it. So I would expect to see that show up on Apple's website any day now. They still are only giving a date of coming this fall, but here we are in the fall and the days are rolling by, so they are actually running out of time. So watch your feeds, watch Apple's website. That could be happening at any minute, might even have already happened by the time you hear this podcast. Definitely, this is a machine not for everyone. Just to remind you, Apple's Mac Pro is going to have Intel Xeon processors with configurations up to 28 cores. It can come with up to 1.5 terabytes of ECC RAM, features AMD Radeon graphics, including a Pro Vega 2 Duo graphics option, and that case design that allows for modular expansion via 8 PCIe expansion slots. It is super exciting, but it comes with a massive price tag starting at around $6,000 US. And when you start configuring it up, it can get up there very, very quickly. I would imagine a lot of models are going to extend into the $10,000 to $15,000 range, which is just crazy. These are machines for the pros of the pros. Definitely not for everyone, but we have been waiting for and really welcome this kind of raw performance and expandability in a machine that runs Mac OS. So this is the machine that pros have been asking for. It comes with a Pro premium price, no doubt. Good news is, though, they're going to continue to make them and assemble them in Austin, Texas, same facility where they've been making the Trash Can Mac Pros. And I'm excited about this release. You know, I'm not excited about buying one. I'm not in the market for this kind of a machine. But for those of you who need them out there, it is exciting times. So what I want to know is, are you excited? Are you in the market for this? Are you going to jump on board day one? Have you already set aside the budget? Let us know what you think about this. Maccast@gmail.com. And one final item we're hearing, and I don't know how this went unnoticed, but developer Steve Trodden-Smith noticed that these new models could possibly ship with new silver and black Magic trackpads and Magic keyboards to match the case design. So we've seen the space gray versions with the iMac Pro, but these would be new additions that would better match the Mac Pro. And there does seem to be a Magic keyboard both with and without the number pad. And it's not clear if these options would be made available separately or only as part of a bundle coming with the Mac Pro. If it rolls out like the iMac Pro did, then it would be bundled together only for the first part of it. And then Apple may eventually release these as individual items that you can sell later down the road. We're just going to have to wait and see, but I do think Mac Pro could be here any minute. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Native. Native creates safe, simple, and effective products that people use in the bathroom every day. Their products are made with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter, and tapioca starch, and formulated without aluminum, parabens, or talc. They're also never tested on animals. I've been using their deodorant for a few weeks now, and it is great. They have a selection of scents for both men and women. I chose the cucumber and mint. And one thing that I've really enjoyed was that the scent is very pleasant and has been effective without being overpowering. I don't like really strongly scented items, and this has a nice subtle smell that works and does a great job, and that is always something I worry about. And if you have sensitivities, they also offer an unscented formula and baking soda free formulas, so they have a lot of great options. For 20% off your first purchase, you can visit nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code MACCAST during checkout. And there really is no risk to try it out because they offer free returns and exchanges in the US. That's nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code MACCAST during checkout to save 20% off your first purchase. And a big thank you to Native for their support of the MACCAST. While we're waiting on a few Apple products that have been rumored to still come out, one product that did roll out quietly this past week was the AirPods Pro, the update to AirPods. And while they rolled out quietly, they have been making quite a splash in the media and in the Apple community. I went ahead and picked up a pair of Apple's new AirPods Pro, and I wanted to share some of my first thoughts and impressions with you. They arrived on the 30th, so I haven't had too much time to spend with them, but so far I have loved the experience. Just like with the original AirPods, it is great out of the box, pairing and all that other stuff is seamless, just like with the other AirPods. But the difference here is that this new design has some changes that make them really nice. And one of the big ones is the fit, because they have little rubber ear tips, and those allow them to sort of seat better and stay in your ears a little bit better. Now, I never personally had a problem with the AirPods falling out, but there are folks out there who have struggled with Apple's AirPod design and who are finding this new AirPods Pro design working out better for them. I tried them on, and so far I love the fit and experience. They are extremely comfortable, I think even more comfortable than the AirPods themselves, the original ones. And the setup process was also amazing. I particularly loved this feature called the fit test, which allows you to determine which size ear tips you should be using. Something that I have often struggled with. I have in the past not been a very big fan of headphones with ear tips, because I could never figure out the right fit, the right ear tips, you know, the silicone ones versus the foam ones. Apple has little silicone ones, or I assume they're silicone, but they are nice and soft and supple, and they fit in your ear and they make a really nice seal. But what they've added is this fit test, because the AirPods Pro actually has a little microphone on the inside of the AirPod and on the outside. And the reason for this is so that the AirPod can listen to what you're hearing and make adjustments, both for the fit test feature, but also more importantly for the other big feature that is in the AirPods Pro, which is the active noise cancellation. But for the fit test, you go in, you put the ear tips on. It comes with the medium ones, so that's what I started out with. You put them in your ears, and then you go into settings, you go into Bluetooth. You tap the little eye icon next to your new AirPods Pro, and then tap the ear tip fit test button. It'll play some music for you, so you just listen to that, and it will use that microphone to analyze what it's hearing and determine if you have a good seal, if you have a good fit. And the reason you would want that is because that's going to help with the noise cancellation feature. So I thought that was great. A great part of the experience. They do include three different sizes of ear tips. You get small, medium, and large, so you can find the ones that fit for you. I will tell you, with the ear tips, you want to be a little bit careful. They have kind of a mesh inside of them, and you want to make sure you don't damage or puncture that. There was a report online of somebody, I believe over on Reddit, who had gotten a little piece of paper in there, tried to poke it out with a needle or a pin, and ended up destroying the ear tip. So just be careful with that. Good news is that John Gruber says that Apple told him ear tip replacements are just $4 US, so they're not going to make you pay a premium for those if you ever need some new ones. So that is good news. As far as sound goes, I think the AirPod Pros sound a little bit better even than the AirPods, which means they sound good, at least to me. Now, I'm not an audiophile, so I don't know how it compares to other higher-end headphones and earbuds, but I like the sound. I also really like the Ola Siri functionality, but of course, I had that with AirPods 2 as well. But just using it with the AirPods Pro has been an enjoyable experience. As far as the case goes, it is a little bit different. If you look at the images, it looks shorter and wider, but actually overall the physical size, it's about the same thickness. And if you turn it on its side and compare it to, or on its end, I guess, I don't know how you describe that, but basically if you turn it in the direction where it's as tall as the old AirPods case is wide, then it's just a little bit taller or a little bit larger in size than the original AirPods case. So not too bad, still very pocketable. For me, the big test is that it fits in the fifth pocket of my jeans, and it still does very well. So good news there. I have never actually had noise-canceling headphones. I've tried them out in the past, both the over-the-ear designs and some in-ear designs. And I have to say, the noise cancellation on the AirPods Pro is interesting. What you basically get is muffled external sound. So you can still kind of hear some things. It doesn't block out everything. It does completely block out any kind of repetitive or ongoing sounds. But if you hear, you know, sudden sounds or noises, what I feel like it feels like is that they sound like they're off in the distance, but you do definitely still hear some sound. The other thing I noticed about the AirPods Pro with the noise cancellation is that it seems to get better over time. So sounds kind of fade out, if that makes sense. And I have a feeling that's because one of the features of the AirPods is using that microphone, and Apple says they adapt over 200 times per second to what's going on in the environment. So I think it starts to pick up and do a better job over time, and it does it pretty quickly. So, like I said, it does a great job of blocking out sort of repetitive sounds. So I'd imagine that if it's like an airplane engine or a car engine, something like that, I've noticed just, you know, wind or other noises that you might have around in your environment, those seem to fade or get filtered out very, very well. And I'm overall enjoying that experience. It also has a really cool feature called transparency mode, because maybe you don't always want all those external sounds blocked out. So what you can do is you can grab and just squeeze the stem. It's got a little divot area that's kind of like a touch area, and it does feel like it has kind of a haptic feedback, because there definitely is like a click, but I don't think there's actually any button there. But if you squeeze and hold that, you can switch between the noise canceling mode and what they call transparency mode. And in transparency mode, it lets the sound in. So you can actually hear what's going on in the environment around you. And then you can do that same gesture again, or that same squeeze action on that button again, to reactivate the noise cancellation when you want to go back into that mode. Another thing that is really nice about the new design is it does have much shorter stems than the original AirPods. So I think overall, from a design standpoint, they look a lot nicer and less obtrusive in your ears. You kind of don't have that little earring effect as much anymore. It looks more like maybe a hearing aid or a smaller Bluetooth headset. So I think that's a nice improvement as well. Like I said, they are a little bit on the pricey side, so they are an investment. And if you need to get replacements, that is a little bit more expensive as well. $89 US for each AirPod, and same pricing for the wireless charging case, which I think is up about $20 from what the AirPods would run you. They do offer Apple Care on the AirPods for $29, and that covers two accidental damage incidents with a premium or a deductible of $29. It does not cover lost or stolen AirPods, though. You still would have to pay the $89 replacement cost if that was your situation. But overall, I am really enjoying the new AirPods. Like I said, I haven't had a ton of time to spend with them, but the little bit of time that I have, they have been great. So very happy with that purchase. And if you've picked up some new AirPods Pro and you want to share your experience with the MacCast community, send us your review, your emails, your audio comments, maccast@gmail.com. The other thing that Apple launched this week, as a matter of fact, just yesterday as I'm recording this podcast, was the new Apple TV Plus service. November 1st was the launch date. And if you're like me, you probably got offered up your 1 year free trial. So I hopped on that right away. You would have needed to have purchased a qualifying product on or after September 10th. And qualifying products are a new Mac, a new iPhone, a new iPad, or a new Apple TV. If you purchased any one of those products within that time frame, you should have been offered up the 1 free year. If you did not qualify for it, then it's going to cost you $4.99 per month, but there is a 7-day free trial, so you can jump in and you can check out some of the shows and see if it is something that you will ultimately want to subscribe to. Now, I will make a comment about the 1 free year offer. I received an email from a listener who had not purchased any of the qualifying products, but was still offered the 1 free year offer. And I'm curious if anybody else in our community had seen this. Now, this listener did purchase an Apple Watch Series 5 within the qualifying time frame, so it feels like maybe Apple Watch might be included in this offer, but we really don't know. It's a little bit confusing at this point. Not really sure why he got the offer, but he did. So if anybody else in our community has gotten the offer and felt like, hey, I don't think I qualified, I'd love to hear about that because I'd kind of like to try to get to the bottom of this. It is a little bit intriguing, but I think it's a big advantage to Apple to have more people on the free year because I think once people get in and start using the service, it's more likely they're going to get hooked on some of the shows and want to continue that subscription. So I don't know why they wouldn't just widen the product range to include things like Apple Watch or maybe even AirPods or Beats headphones. Those are very expensive items, in many cases more expensive than, say, an Apple TV, so I don't know why they wouldn't qualify, but that was just sort of how Apple had marketed it. So I did start to watch one of the new shows and took a little peek at another one. I watched the first 2 episodes of the series C, and watched a quick episode of Snoopy in Space, and so far I am loving it. As far as C goes, it has intrigued me enough to want to keep watching it. I will say there are some scenes with sexual situations. It's mild, I guess, might be how to describe it, but it is definitely not appropriate for younger children or preteens. Might not even be appropriate for your teen, depending upon your own sensibilities and your family. So a lot of the rumors early on had been that Apple was going to try to keep things family friendly. I can definitely testify to the fact that that is not necessarily the case. There also is violence in C, although, again, it's more on the moderate level. I would put it somewhere between, for both the sexual situations and the violence, somewhere between probably a PG-13 and an R rating. There is, for example, with the violence, blood shown, but it is much more mild than stuff shown in shows like Game of Thrones. Overall, again, it feels somewhere between primetime network TV and cable networks like HBO and Showtime. So it's not going full maximum, but it's definitely not, you know, on that primetime, we could show this on primetime television, and somewhere in the middle is kind of how I'm feeling about it. And I've heard that about some of the other shows. I believe there's some sexual situations and content in Dickinson as well. But I'm looking forward to checking out some of the other shows like Dickinson, like For All Mankind. I'm sure I'll be sharing some of my thoughts and impressions on some of those shows in future episodes. But I'd also, again, like to know a lot from the community. If you have started watching some of the Apple TV Plus shows, what shows are you enjoying? What things are you maybe not enjoying? And how do you overall feel about it? Do you feel it's actually a good value at $4.99 a month? Now, Apple is going to be adding a lot more content. They say they're going to add at least one new TV show or movie each month to the service. So it will build out its content pretty quickly. I feel like the launch content is probably just enough. Maybe falling on a little bit shy, but if they are going to come out with new content that frequently, I think they're going to stay ahead of the curve. And like I said, without the free trial, you can get a 7-day, or without the free year, rather, you can get a 7-day free trial. And then it's $4.99 a month after that for a family up to 6 people can share the service. And good news, if you are a student and you're on the Apple Music plan for students, that is $4.99 a month, you're going to get Apple TV Plus included as part of that offer. So looks like there's kind of a student bundle, hoping at some point Apple actually has a bundle for the rest of us. I'd be willing to pay to have all of my Apple services kind of rolled into one package and pay a little bit of a, you know, higher price for the privilege. Of course, a discount from buying all those subscriptions separately, but it wouldn't have to be much, say $5 a month less and getting the whole package. And I think that would be great. And I'm hoping, and that's something we've heard rumored, and I'm hoping that it's something ultimately that Apple will do. But let me know what you think about AirPods Pro and the new Apple TV Plus service. I'd love to hear from you. As you likely know, macOS Catalina is out and has been out for a little bit. And one of the features that is in there is an update to the Reminders application. And we talked about the fact on the last MacCast that in order to use the new Reminders, you do need to have all of your Macs and your iOS devices updated to take advantage of that. And unfortunately, a lot of us out there have older Macs and devices that maybe don't support macOS Catalina. So I received a question this week that I thought was a great one from Justin, and here is what he had to say.
Hey, Adam. This is Justin, a longtime listener and supporter of the MacCast, calling from Tupelo, Mississippi. I was just listening to the October 19th edition where you were talking about reminders and trying to give people warning, and wanted to just ask a question about that and comment. So obviously this came up with the Mac OS update for, and before that the iOS update, and I've of course got a phone and multiple iPads and three computers between work and home and a laptop. One of my computers is a iMac 27. It's a late 2009 that has a 1 terabyte SSD, and I just moved it to work from home in preparation for Catalina. And what really held me up upgrading before was Quicken. And finally, Quicken has come out with a version that seems to be just as good as the 2007 version, and I wanted to let other MacCast users know about that. It's a seamless upgrade for me, and it's 64-bit. And I think it's time for the majority of us to make the upgrade. It wasn't painful at all, and other versions of Quicken have not been. So that allowed me to upgrade and move on to Catalina eventually. But this Reminders thing is kind of holding me up, as well as some problems with Catalina. And I was just wondering, because I'd like to be able to use the new Reminders at work. I use Reminders every day, multiple times a day. What the experience of other MacCasters, as well as yourself, is of the Mac OS patchers, for example, with Catalina or with other versions of the software put out there by DOSDUDE 1. That's DOSDUDE 1. And apparently that allows folks to, on older Macs that aren't compatible, to run newer versions of the software, although there's some limitations that are there. So just wondering if what your experience or those of the listeners is, and looking forward to hearing back. Thanks so much.
Hey, Justin, thank you for your email, and thanks for updating us on Quicken. I know that's something that comes up in the community a lot. Questions about Quicken, a lot of people really like and use that application, and it often is a deterrent to updating. So it's nice to know that there is a new version out there that is 64-bit and runs fairly well. I'm sure a lot of folks in our community will be happy to hear that. Getting back to your question, though, about the DOS Dude 1 patchers, I do have to tell you that I have heard about these. I have never actually personally used them, although I do get emails from members of the MacCast community, MacCasters as you call them, and I like that term. I think we'll start to use that more. Yeah, MacCasters out there. I've heard from other MacCasters out there who do use these patches so that they can run the current versions of macOS on their older systems. In this case, I haven't heard of anybody using the macOS Catalina patcher, but I do know several people who use the macOS Mojave patcher and said that they got pretty good results. I will tell you, and I'll have a link to these in the show notes at maccast.com, I will tell you that if you are going to use them, you want to make sure you check your Mac model number for compatibility. And ultimately, I don't know how good performance would be. I would imagine okay, but I would expect, depending upon the model that you have and how old it is, those results could vary. I would also expect that you're going to run into some, if not many, quirks when you're trying to run on an older non-supported system. So while the patcher will make it work technically, the question becomes is what is the user experience like? And a lot of people get frustrated with Apple because they think, well, if this guy can patch it and make it work on my older Mac, why is Apple not supporting my older machine? And the quick answer really is the fact that Apple does a lot of due diligence, and it's about the user experience. They want to make sure you have an optimal user experience when you're upgrading your operating system. And if they've put it through testing and determined that there's, you know, something about that experience that's not ideal, then they're not going to support that system. So patching your system to run on an unsupported machine, yeah, you're probably going to run into some of those issues that ultimately caused Apple to not support the machine in the first place. So just go in eyes wide open and be aware of that. The other thing that I think is obvious, but sometimes people need to be reminded about, is that when it comes to troubleshooting a system like this, you're pretty much on your own, because it's going to be much harder to troubleshoot issues and really know if it's something that is a true problem in the operating system, or are you just having that issue because you're running on an unsupported configuration? So, you know, just some things to think about if you're doing this. But as far as your question goes, you know, does it work? Do people do it? Absolutely. I think it does work. And DOS Dude 1 has been a great contributor to the Mac community, making this possible. And I can't even imagine the amount of work that goes into it. So I will say, just in closing, if any of you do try to use or do ultimately end up using his patcher to run Catalina on an older system, please make a donation to him. He does this work via Donationware, and the work he is doing is absolutely amazing. He deserves to get supported and deserves to get paid for it. So if you are going to use the patcher and it works successfully for you, go ahead and kick him a few bucks. It doesn't have to be a lot. The more, the better. But hey, if you can send him $1, $5, maybe even $20, I think that is a fair trade, especially if he gets Catalina running on your older system. So thanks, Justin, for the question. I will throw it out to other members of the community. If you are using the patcher to run Catalina on your older Mac operating or your older Mac computer, let us know what your experience has been like. Have you run into any issues? If you have you been able to work around them? How did you work around them? Share some information with us. Shoot us an email, maccast@gmail.com. And then finally, for the show for this week, I do want to talk a little bit about a new feature that is in the HomePod with the iOS 13.2.1 update, and that is the ambient sounds. Apple added ambient sounds to the HomePod so that if you're sitting around and you want a little relaxation, maybe you're trying to go to sleep at night and you like to have a little bit of ambient noise, you can request that right from Siri on your HomePod. Of course, if you want to update your HomePod OS, you need to make sure that you're on iOS 13.2.1. You can tap into the home application or the home icon in the home app. So open up the home app, tap on the little home icon in the upper left-hand corner, tap on software update, and just make sure you're on iOS 13.2.1. If you are, then you should be able to use this new ambient sounds feature. And Apple offers a number of different ambient sounds: white noise, stream, rain, ocean, night, forest, and fireplace. And if you want to activate any of these on your HomePod, all you have to do is say, "Hey, lady, play X sounds." So for example, "Hey, lady, play rain sounds." And that's kind of the key phrasing: play and then the name of the sound that you want, the ambient sound that you want, and then the word sound. And if you do that, then you should have no trouble getting her to play those. If you want to play a random sound, you can say "play ambient sounds," and she will pick a random one for you. So try that out. I played around with it a little bit. The sounds are very nicely designed and very pleasant from what I can tell. I'm not an expert in ambient sound generators or ambient sound apps, but it felt nice to me. And then another cool thing that you can do, especially if you're using the ambient sounds to go to sleep at night, is once you've started playing the ambient sound, you can follow up and say, "Hey lady, set a sleep timer." And then she will ask you how long you want your timer set for. And then you can have your HomePod stop playing after a certain amount of time automatically. So nice little new feature with the HomePod, especially if you have one maybe in a bedroom or living room space and you just want to get a little bit of relaxation. And I'm going to play around with it a little bit more. And I'm also, again, really enjoying the new multi-user feature because now I can get my own music not mixed in with my daughter's music when she's playing her favorite playlists and things like that. Also, we can each get our own personal requests. So if we want to listen to messages or get our calendar items, Siri can recognize our voices. And so far, that's worked out okay. Like I said, setting it up was a huge problem. I did have to do that entire reset procedure. But once that was done, she does seem to pretty faithfully recognize my voice. Although every once in a while, she will think that my daughter is me. Probably because we have maybe similar sounding voices at this time. I don't know. There's probably a little bit of crossover. Hopefully she'll learn and get a little bit better over time. But that feature does seem to be working okay so far. But with that, that is going to do it for the MacCast for this week. Thank you for hanging out with me. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen, also Text Expander and PDF Pen for iOS, along with PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information, details on all of Smile's great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you'll find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can also check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or check out Instagram, MacCast there as well. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.